You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. From pandemics to populism to the rise of artificial intelligence, as well as gaping inequalities all the way to climate change, humans are facing some unprecedented challenges that some say threaten our very existence. In the new book, Framers, Human Advantage in an Age of Technology and Turmoil, the authors of the breakout bestseller, Big Data, are offering a reason to be optimistic. Humans have a unique ability to frame or think in mental models, which means that we can come up with solutions that meet our moment in history. One of those authors, Victor Meyer-Schornberger, is joining us today to talk more. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Gemma.
And we should note, not only are you joining us, you're joining us all the way from the Alps, as in the Swiss Alps.
As in the Austrian Alps, and I'm looking
Austrian out Alps, okay.
Yeah, that's where I grew up. I'm a rural kid.
Well, I love technology just for these moments. So can we start by how you would define framing?
Absolutely. Framing basically is all about how we humans think about the world around us. We think about it in terms of mental models. We make a mental model about the world and how it works, and then we play with it in our mind. We interact with it. We ask what-if questions. And the framing is basically running that mental model.
So does that mean that we could maybe find, you know, patterns or maybe predict how things might unfold, things like that?
Absolutely. But what is interesting is that we have known for quite a long time that we think in mental models, that we think in these frames. But what is relatively new is our understanding that this is actually a cognitive muscle, that this is something we can get better at, that this can improve our lot individually and as society, because it helps us make better decisions, not by picking the right option, but by coming up with better options.
Okay, so here's what I'm curious about then. If we think that way with mental models and it's how we view the world, I would think we might get maybe stuck in certain patterns. So then what about this idea of really needing to have a perspective that allows for diversity when we're thinking about framing?
Absolutely. To think in a frame that is quite familiar to us is something that is not only the case because we are lazy thinkers, but because it is most of the time okay. It's quite efficient. If nothing changes, why change your mental model? Why change your frame? The problem only arises when the world around us changes, when the context shifts. Then we need to think whether the frame that we are using still works or it doesn't. And at that moment, it is really helpful if we have a whole repertoire of frames in our mind so that we can pick one that is better suited for the new context that we find ourselves in. And that's the beauty of cognitive diversity.
And so I would think that then that goes to, you know, moments in history, right? Moments in time when let's just take, for example, the social justice movement that we really saw a resurgence of. People of color have been fighting this fight always, but, you know, with the killing of George Floyd last May 25th, it brought to the forefront, I think, for white people, at least in the United States, about maybe having to rethink things or reframe things. Does that make sense?
Absolutely does make sense. But we see it in a number of other contexts as well. The Me Too movement, moving women out of sort of the silent corner of victimhood and giving them an empowerment, a message of empowerment that also points the finger at the perpetrators rather than victimizes the victim. This was a moment of empowerment. Martin Luther King saying, "I have a dream," was basically communicating that he had a different reality in mind. I have a dream. Mm. What if we could be working and living together rather than be racially segregated and separated. These are not only powerful messages, but they are frames that shape our thinking and our decision making.
So let's talk about other framing, because I'm thinking about, you know, at least the last 14, 16 months with the global pandemic, with COVID, and how maybe framing has impacted where we are right now.
Of course, for some people, for example, wearing a mask is something that is sort of the rational outcome of the frame of epidemiology or of science. For others, it's an issue about personal freedom and liberty. And depending on what frame you're in, you come up with different decisions, even up to the policymakers. You know, in the United Kingdom, in Britain, and in New Zealand, politicians had different views about the pandemic. In Britain, they thought it was like the flu, and so tried to mitigate it. In the New Zealand, they thought it was a really serious infection and tried to eradicate it through a very drastic lockdown. But after the first couple of weeks of lockdown, they had essentially eradicated it and could go back to normal, which Britain couldn't for the last 18 months, 16 months.
So that would be similar then to what happened in the United States, I would assume, with COVID-19, is the framing of it, frankly, being politicized over it being a public health issue, then could have consequences as to where we are now.
Well, Gemma, what I think is important to understand is that there aren't bad frames per se, with one exception, but that there is a lot of bad framing going on. That is, there is a lot of frames that we use that don't fit the context. I don't want to, you know, point out a particular frame and say this is a bad frame, but in some contexts, using a bad frame is really bad. We used an example in the book of Lysenkoism. During the Soviet Union, there was a guy called Lysenko, and he thought that the best way to run agriculture is through huge monocultures, because there can only be one class of plants in a classless society. That was a stupid idea. It caused famine. It caused millions of people dying. That monoculture was a really bad framing for this particular context, but it isn't necessarily a bad frame in itself.
Okay. We're talking with Victor Meyer-Schoenberger. He is one of the authors of a new book. It's called Framers, Human Advantage in an Age of Technology and Turmoil. So I'm curious then, how can we frame moving forward post-pandemic? In particular, let's talk about the workplace, because, you know, so many people's workplace was turned upside down. I mean, I've been working from home for the last 14 months. Sure. So how, you know, our environments have fundamentally changed. So how can we think of, you know, opportunities, I guess, when we look at framing moving forward?
What is important is to see more options than we saw in the past. The pandemic has also shown us that working from home for a number of people actually works. Work does get done, not ideally in some instances, but it does get done. And that we were pushed into this sometimes hybrid situation of work. Now, what does this mean for us? It opens a new perspective, a new opportunity to then think about work in the future as not necessarily something that needs to be happening at a particular location, but that we pick a location because it suits the substance of what we have to do. So we go to work, to a physical location, to interact with others, to come up with better ideas, better solutions, to make some decisions. But then if we need to do also some actual tasks and fulfill them, we can do them from home. It frees us because we are not forced into the conventional wisdom anymore.
You know, it's really true how that has definitely shifted for so many people. Before I let you go, I want to talk about some real life examples. You had mentioned the Me Too movement, but you do talk about some of this in your book. So can we talk about first Apple versus Nokia when we're talking about mobile phones and the framing of that?
Of course. Nokia was the world leader in mobile phones only about 15 years ago, but they saw the mobile phone as a device to call other people. Apple saw the mobile phone as a shrunk computer on which you could load all kinds of software through the App Store. And that opened up vastly new opportunities of what you can do with the device. And so within 2 years, Nokia was toast and Apple was the leader.
You know, that's amazing when you said 15 years ago, Nokia was the leader in mobile phones, because it seems like Apple has always had the leading edge of that. That's fascinating. What about Apple versus Spotify in regards to music?
See, if you were a good framer once, like Apple was with mobile phones, it doesn't guarantee you that you're always a good framer. Think about music. Apple had a great run with the iTunes Music Store. You purchase and download music, but people really don't want to purchase and download music. People want to listen to music. People want to experience music. And so when Spotify came on stage and said, you know what? You don't have to go out and purchase and then listen. You can just listen. And that was a reconceiving of music, not as something that you own, but that you experience, and that left Apple in the dust.
It's fascinating. So, and it's all about just how you frame something.
Exactly.
What is your hope for the main takeaway for folks who pick up this book and read it?
You know, my main hope is that people understand that framing is not just a fact of life. It's a cognitive muscle. It's a capability that we all have. We all can get better at this. We're pretty good at it already as toddlers, and then we forget a lot of it. We can get better at this. We just need to harness the power that's in us, and then we can meet the challenges that fate throws at us individually and as a society.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking time to talk with us today. I think it's just so fascinating, especially with these real world examples. We've been talking with Victor Meyer Schornberger. He is one of the authors of the new book. It's called Framers: Human Advantage in an Age of Technology and Turmoil. We'll have more Idaho Matters next.